This is
Positively Hygiene
with your host, Amber Lovatos,
Amy Parenti,
and Angela Doe.
Listen on as we dive into the positive of dental hygiene. Angela.
Yeah.
I am hashtag sober.
Yeah.
Sort of. Not like because like of a problem or anything, but in September, I decided to give up alcohol altogether just because I felt like it wasn't, one, because I want to be healthy for IVF and future pregnancies. And part of that is like losing weight and alcohol has a lot of sugar in it. But also because alcohol wasn't necessarily helping me in any way. And I am very much a social drinker. So like, I don't drink during the week. I only drink on the weekends. But I would find that when I would drink, I tend to like binge. And that's like very common in Latin community where people are like bingers. Then I would like, even if I didn't binge, I would find myself like super hungover the next day and not being able to produce. And you like lose that day. And part of like drinking was because I felt like social anxiety or like you want to have fun or, you know, like, how do I talk to people when you're like intimidating spaces?
And yeah,
there was an incident over the summer where I went out. We could relate to this in the sense that like these dental parties, these dental conferences are so booze filled. They're so like surrounded by alcohol.
It is.
Anyways, I ended up saying some things that were very much truths and I will stand behind them. I was just being very, very vocal about like something I didn't stand for and that I didn't like. But I know that drunk Amber probably a little bit more aggressive or probably would say things that sober Amber wouldn't say. And the next day, people were being weird with me. I don't think it was necessarily related to me. But then I was like, oh, did I overstep a line? And then feeling like bad about like my actions or whatever. And I didn't do anything bad. And I was basically saying something about a man who is in dental industry, who I feel like is kind of inappropriate. And so I stand by that. I stand by the thing that I think that he's inappropriate and he creeps me out. And I think, you know, like if somebody gives you red flags, somebody gives you red flags. But so the next day I remember like the people who I was talking to maybe were like a little bit, I'm sure they were like worked and stressed and maybe that's why they like, they were not, and things are cool now.
Yeah.
But in those moments I was like, ooh, or it's like.
Yeah, you get paranoid.
You do. Yeah. And I was like, okay. And then being in those situations where I've had to like the same person who like gives me the creeps. There was an instance where we were like all out at dental conference and I felt like he was being a little bit too like attentive and not in a good way to another girl. And I had to like step in between because I was like, this is a really cute girl. And I don't know, I'm probably older than her and he's older than us. And I just felt like motherly and like, let me protect her. Let me stand like between them. And I'm just like, man, what if I didn't have my wits about me? You know, what if I'd been like, and I'm not saying that he would do anything, but it's just like being in those situations where I think health-wise, it wasn't helping me. Mentally, it wasn't helping me. Like socially, safety-wise, it wasn't helping me. And so, yeah, I decided to give up alcohol altogether, which honestly, and I gave up a bunch of things, actually. I gave up soda. Yes. I gave up alcohol. And I gave up fast food. Surprisingly, the soda has been the easiest thing and alcohol has been the hardest thing.
That's really good, Amber. I'm so proud of you. Because that's what? Okay, you said September, October.
And we were in December, Vegas in September.
Like 4 months. Yeah.
We were in Vegas. Yeah.
Like, I drink. But I'm definitely past the days where like, let's get drunk, you know, because to me, I'm like, no, I'm not having a hangover. Like,
yeah.
I can't have that in my life, nor do I want that in my life. So I'll drink socially, you know, maybe at a dental party, you know, have a drink in my hand, but never to where like, I know my limit, you know,
yeah.
I know like when I'm starting to feel a little buzzed or tipsy, I'm like, no, that's it. Because I don't want any accidents happening or that something will slip or, you know, I mean, that's what alcohol can do to you.
Yeah.
And so I'm very cautious. I know like even during, what is it? I went to a Evolution, right? And they were even teaching how like, which I don't know if I agree with or not, but they were even teaching how like if you go to a dental party or you have a business dinner that you only have two alcoholic drinks. And you never, no matter what, no matter if the person, the company sponsoring it is drinking more than two drinks, you only limit yourself to two drinks. And I don't know if that was coming from a place. I don't know if it was coming from a place of like, after two drinks, you're going to get drunk, you know, sort of deal. Because some people do have a higher limitation.
Yeah.
That where they could have like three drinks and be totally
and
cool.
I know people who like drink and totally are like fine the next day and totally are cool like the day of, like when they're drinking. And I just was finding that health-wise, it wasn't serving me. Mentally, it wasn't serving me. I was also finding like, why do I feel the need to drink alcohol to be social?
Yeah. You know? I get that. And I think, and you've never, even though you like voiced it to me, I appreciate you never like made me feel bad if I like drink or not, you know, if I'm like, hey, you're like, no, you can have whatever you'd want.
I actually gave Angela all my wine.
I know. My husband was like, what are you doing with all this wine? He's like, you're going to drink it all. And really, like, I go through my phases. Like, sometimes I'll have like a glass of wine to wind down during the night or something once a week. But then I feel bad because then I feel like I'm wasting the bottle of wine. So then I stop doing it. So it just like, it goes
in. I mean, I will say during COVID, we were drinking a ton. I was drinking a ton. We would have like these happy hours and we would go to like Taco Cabana. Have like the margarita happy hours. Because
then that's when they started doing like, you can take them in the car to go. Like, serving alcohol.
And so like, I never like drank during the week. And then also during COVID, I'm drinking during the week, you know? I mean, because I guess like that was the only social we had. We'd have virtual happy hours with our friends. But yeah, I gave up alcohol and I will say, yeah, it's been probably like the hardest thing. But also, like, I've had a lot of friends and people like I'm connected with really dealing with these substances, and really starting me to like reflect on like, is this healthy for me? No. And then the other thing is my dad had liver cancer.
Yeah.
And I have higher liver enzymes. Everybody saw my stories. I had endoscopy yesterday. Part of that's because I've been having some abdominal pain and they were trying to, and my liver enzymes were higher. And so they're like, like, what's going on? And because I have a family history of liver cancer, I had a CT, I had an MRI, I have a fibro scan, and now endoscopy. And I think things are fine. But if my liver's already acting up, then I need to strain out before I get too old. And I'm not like even that old. But also, like, I recently had a friend who went to rehab. And these are like super like professional, not in dentistry, but professional and smart people, educated people. I think sometimes we think that these people who are dealing with substance issues are people who are maybe like poor or I don't know, you know, ghetto, which I don't necessarily think is the truth. I think it impacts all sorts of communities. I had another, I don't know what should I think that I'm like associated with a lot of drug people, but I've known at least a decent amount of people who've had their issues with substance abuse. Like I knew this one guy who I'm friends with, and he had a cocaine addiction and it blew out his nostrils before he got sober. And he has like a doctorate.
Yeah. And that's what drugs do, right?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter how bright or smart or intelligent or you know what's bad for you, right? You, because of what they do to the body and what they do to the brain, you still go back to it.
I was listening to this TikTok. It was this woman who was like, who talks about how she's alcoholic. And she's like, you know, I thought I will never be a day drinker. That like being a day drinker will mean that I'm an alcoholic. But what happened? I started with just drinking wine. The wine wasn't enough, right? She's like, I would feel really guilty about drinking a whole bottle of wine, but drinking half a bottle of wine wasn't enough. So I started mixing the vodka with wine. And so the next day my hangover is starting to feel worse. So I thought, well, I'll just have a drink and during the day to like help ease that over. And it did help ease it over. And then I feel like crap again. And then I drink again. And it became this whole like cycle for her until it spirals, right? And that's like not intentional. And I don't think that everybody's addicted to things. I don't think that I have like an addiction to alcohol, but I do think that it wasn't like serving me either.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I've had friends who are sober. My sister's brother-in-law OD'd a couple years ago.
Yeah. I remember you telling me that.
Yeah. And so, you know, sometimes I hear my nieces talk about like, you know, about their uncle and how they went to go like visit him at the cemetery. And that's sad. It's because of drugs, right? My other cousin recently had her niece pass away. They also think it was about because of drugs. Fentanyl is a huge thing right now. I had a patient kind of recently, I thought about this, who like I suspected had drug usage, right? And like, how do you have that conversation with them without judging them, without them feeling judged? Right, but also wanting to know so that you can provide the best care possible to them.
Yeah.
And so I just asked, I was like, hey, like, would you, I didn't even know how the conversation went about, but I was like, you know, really, really having a hard time like numbing you. Do you have a resistance to medications? And he's like, well, I do have a high tolerance to drugs. And then that opened the conversation to be like, oh, what kind of drugs? Mm-hmm. Right. And he's like, well, I used to do bars, which is Xanax. And he's like, that would have to take like more than the normal for it to like work on me. And so we were able to have these conversations without him feeling like judged, but also feeling like, okay, like this maybe gives you some background as to like why we're struggling so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I do think those things are important. But if you know people who are using drugs, and like I think I was telling you earlier, what I find is, you know, it's not so much the cocaine usage or the Molly usage, which is ecstasy or MDMA. It's the things that are normal.
Yeah, the prescription.
The prescription drugs, yeah. Right? People who like, what I've heard is that they'll be on things like Adderall to help them during the day, get them energized, get them doing things. Thing with Adderall, they, and those types of drugs, they also have like a downer at the end.
Yeah.
They don't eat all day. They feel horrible at the end of it. And so to ease over that anxiety, they'll take Xanax. Let Xanax help them with that, right? But Xanax also makes you feel kind of poopy. You know, again, there goes that cycle.
Yeah. Right? I remember when I started college the first time around, so like 18, 19 years ago. Yeah, all the students, they were not, I mean, I didn't because I was always like not aware of things going on, but they would be buying Adderall off of each other to focus in school and whatnot. But like, you know, like you said, it can be detrimental when you're not using it for the right reasons.
Yeah. And I mean, it could be that they have like a need for it, right? I was prescribed Xanax many moons ago and I did not like Xanax. I've been on Valium and clonazepam and Xanax for my panic attacks. And do they like help me? They absolutely help me. I did not, and I'm actually a fan more of clonazepam than I am of Valium diazepam because I felt like Xanax was really strong. So I could see how somebody would, they don't give me a high. What they do is when I'm having panic attacks and I feel like my heart rate is like accelerating and my blood pressure is getting really high, it helps lower my physical reaction to the panic attack. And so like once it like lowers those physical feelings, I'm able to work through like the mental feelings. But for me, Xanax was like too strong. It would just like knock me out. It was too much for me. And so they put me on Valium, which is not as strong. And I was doing Valium for a long time until a doctor was like, have you ever tried clozapam? And because I was telling her, I was like, you know, I do take the Valium when I need it. Not even like, and I haven't taken one in a minute, like over a year. I took some when I was going through a miscarriage and stuff because that was a hard time for me. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I really try to like top it out, good or bad, I don't know. But the problem with Valium is the next day I would feel bad.
Yeah.
And so then goes that cycle, right? Like you feel bad, so you take another one, and you feel bad, you take another one. And I have like a real concern about anxiety because an addiction, because I've had a lot of history of drug addiction in my family. My grandfather was an alcoholic. My uncle had a drug problem, and I'll talk about his story a little bit. You know, I have another uncle who definitely has an alcohol problem. And so there's just like a lot of drug addiction issues in my family. And so I've always had this concern of like, I'm going to get addicted to things. And because growing up, you know, suffered from a lot of depression and stuff, I was on a lot of medications and I did go through a withdrawal. If anybody knows anything about like antidepressants and antipsychotics, I was on Seroquel. I was on a ton of it. I was like, I think I was on 500 milligrams of Seroquel, which is ridiculous. It was a ton. I was like on 800 milligrams of Depakote. I was on like 10 medications. I was on a ton. The last one I got off of was Seroquel. It was because I got pregnant and they couldn't take me off of Seroquel. They took me off all the medications, like cold turkey, you're off. Because I got pregnant and then there with the Seroquel, they could not take me off of it. I had to like wean off of it. I could not sleep. It was like super intense. It was a lot. And I don't ever want to go through that type of like situation again. And so like I have this fear of using the medications. And so my doctor was like, oh, have you tried clozapam? It's not as intense. It still does what it needs to do, but the next day you don't feel as bad. So that's the one I've switched over to. I was in Mexico recently and we talked about kind of like what started all. Because we used to have a lot of land in Mexico because of my grandfather's addiction. He ended up like selling the land, but really it was giving away the land to get money for booze and not really selling it. People took advantage of like the fact that he was a drunk.
Yeah.
And I had an uncle recently who always very straight line. super straight line. He got involved with like the government there, and I think in politics, and again, like educated people, right? They also use drugs, and I think he got his first taste of drugs there. He spiraled, like, and he was older in life. I would say he's 50 at least, I would say. So it was in the last, I would say it was at least 30s and his 40s when he got addicted.
Wow.
Uh-huh. Things like they would find him on the ground during the daytime and people would have to like bring him home, and small communities, you know, they suffered a lot because of that. And like I said, he was always very straight line. I don't think like we ever thought like this, it would hit him. He ended up losing like his business and all this stuff. And I have an uncle who his son was murdered. And he definitely suffers from alcoholism because of that. And just like all these traumas, you know. And so I'm not saying that like everybody goes through these things. I think these are like very intense stories. But I think also important to talk about, right? And I do think like alcohol is very much very normalized these days. And I'm a little concerned. I've been in a lot of situations where like one-on-one I'm with friends and I'm like, I just don't drink anymore. And my friends are pretty cool with that.
Yeah.
And for the most part, like I hang out with Steph and Britt, and they don't drink. And so that like makes it easier mm-hmm. for me. And you don't drink a whole ton. And if you drink, like it's not like pressure for me to drink.
Yeah.
But I haven't been in any situations where it's like I've felt pressure to drink, and I am kind of concerned. Because it is very normalized in dentistry to drink.
It is. And like, for me, when I choose to drink, it's because I'm like, ooh, this sounds like it will taste good. Like, it's never like, oh, I need to loosen up. I need to feel good, you know? And so I think it's awesome that you are in tune and realizing like it's not serving me anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that's the important question to ask about different things across life too. Yeah. I think what you said though, it's like you sort of find out who really cares about you. I hated it when people were like, oh, why are you babysitting your drink? Stop babysitting your drink and like forcing you to drink. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, if I don't want to drink this in 5 seconds, I'm not going to drink this in 5 seconds. Don't try to make me feel bad for babysitting my drink. What are, you know, we're in our 30s. Come on. Or making me take a shot. And like, no, I don't need to take a shot.
Yeah.
you know, and sometimes, I mean, there's been moments where maybe I'm like, oh, I really don't want to. So then like I've pushed it away. I think one time I was pressured into taking a shot, and a stranger next to me knew I didn't want to take it. And he saw how uncomfortable I was. And he's like, don't do it. Like he was encouraging me. He was like, don't do it. Don't do it. He's like, and so I appreciated that. Like that he realized, you know, that people are aware of what else is going on, you know, and not just like,
for sure.
Because sometimes I like to go to a bar just to be with friends, just to listen to the music, to talk, to socialize. You know, I'm not there to like, let's ham it up, you know.
We have my husband's Christmas party on Thursday tomorrow. And like, they always drink. And this will be my first time drinking. But honestly, they're super chill that I don't think anybody will like notice that I probably won't drink if they ask. Oh, actually, I went to the wedding with them. They like recently, and I was like not drinking. And I think people probably assume that I'm pregnant, which I'm not. Mm-hmm. But they already know. Like we've been trying and stuff, so I think maybe that's giving me like a pass. That's why people are like, oh, then let's ask her, let's whatever. They're like, oh, you're not drinking? I'm like, no, I'm not drinking. But it's also when it was with my husband, it's kind of easier because I can be like, oh, I'm DD.
Yeah.
Although my husband doesn't really drink either.
Well, you know, when you're like, is it, it's normalized, and you're, I'm thinking like, you're right. It is normalized to drink when it not necessarily need to be, because people think it's weird that you don't, when you don't drink, like something is wrong with you.
Yes.
Something is going on why you're not drinking, when no, it's okay to not drink.
Like, so I think that that's kind of like, what's interesting is that it's more normalized to be a drinker than to not be a drinker. I think you also want to talk about some like other drugs. So like talk about Xanax and Adderall. I think one I haven't heard of very often is Whippets or nitrous. Very common in like the rave scenes, the EDM scenes, the electronic dance music scenes, where they would, and I've been to my fair share of festivals, and you see people with balloon. They are, and they put a whipped cream canister to the balloon, and I think that pops it open, and I guess the nitrous goes into the balloon, and then they suck on the balloon to get high.
So the nitrous from the can goes into the balloon, and then they suck it out of the balloon.
I think that's how that works. But something like that. But the other way they do this when they're not like necessarily on festivals is they buy a whipped cream canister. Like if you're like making gourmet or fresh whipped cream, I guess. But they don't put anything inside the canister. Like they don't put any like whatever, like the milk or the liquid, whatever you would put in there. But they put the canister, so it's like has a nozzle where you would spray it out like the whipped cream. But instead they put their mouth there. And they put the canister on top the whipped cream canister on top and they spray it. And so when you spray it into the bottle, there's supposed to be milk there, right? That or a dairy product that would make it into whipped cream. But there's nothing in there. So instead they just breathe it in and they get high. Whippets,
but I didn't know like it worked like that.
Yeah, they get high off of that. But and you've also, I don't know if you've heard, people get high off the whipped cream. That's why they ID you when you buy whipped cream sometimes.
Oh my God. I haven't bought whipped cream in a while, but I didn't know that. No.
Yeah, so I think they do it. I'm not sure. I guess maybe they do it right side up. I don't know. Or there's a way they can do it where the whipped cream doesn't come out and they get high off the whippet.
Oh my God. Or
I don't know, whatever. It's the nitrous, right?
I mean, I've heard of Tide Pods, but like.
I think we get high off Tide Pods, right?
They get, yeah, like, yeah, you eat them or something.
And they get high?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. That's why they, I think you have to show ID. Well, no, they haven't asked me. Well, maybe I don't look, that's why. But there was restrictions on buying Tide Pods.
But now I recently was talking to one of my dentist friends and apparently they have increased the size of the whippets that you can buy. So the concern with whippets is, and I don't know that like there are studies on this, like somebody should do a study on this, but I would think those canisters, if you ever made whipped cream, those canisters are cold.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're putting this like freeze, I feel like, in their throat. How does that like, one, not increase your chances of oral cancer?
Oh my right. God, yeah.
But the other really big thing is they're getting this high off of like reducing oxygen to their brain. Because when we give nitrous, we give nitrous with oxygen, mm-hmm. right? But they're just straight up nitrous.
Oh my gosh, that's so scary.
That is scary. But then I think the other thing is, so I heard that they're increasing the size of these, or they have increased the size. I'll have to go and like see, because they sell them like at sex shops and stuff. Mm-hmm. People can just go and buy like a box of them. Maybe we'll like make a trip to see. But they were telling me was that now you can buy them, and I'm sure they sell them at like restaurant type stores, or you can buy them bigger sizes than the nitrous, the whippet. And so my concern is like, you're reducing that oxygen, right? But now by longer levels, I'd be afraid that that might cause somebody to like asphyxiate.
Yeah.
So I don't know, somebody should, because when I was in hygiene school, I was like, ooh, this would be a good table clinic topic. Mm. But I couldn't find enough studies on it, and I haven't looked it up in recent years. I think the other really big thing, obviously, we hear a lot about is vapes.
Yeah.
And people aren't just vaping nicotine, they're vaping weed and other things, right?
Substances.
I don't know what else they put in there, but problems is they're not regulated, right? But the really other big thing is kids are doing it.
Yeah.
It's so accessible to kids. My boys have said that, I mean, they're in high school. They've said that they've seen kids in school with vapes, that they've caught kids in restrooms doing like vaping, that it's, you know, normalized and common, and you see it everywhere now.
I took a C course not too long ago about vaping, and it just never occurred to me, but a reason why they do that is that they disguise it so well. So there was like this YouTube video of the lady and with a dad and a table full of things you would see a teenager have. And she was like, I want you to pick, and it was like full of things, right? She was like, I want you to pick off on this table things that you think are vapes. It was a really good video. I need to find it. And then so the dad's like, okay. And they're like hoodies, highlighters, a smartwatch, pens, notebooks, all these things. And so the dad was like picking out stuff, and some things he got right. But the ones that really shocked me was a hoodie. So it was like the drawstring in the hoodie.
What?
Was the vape. Yeah. It was attached to something. And then also the backpack. So like if a backpack has like strings on it, or like, you know, there's some like water backpacks, or you can put a water in your backpack and it has the nozzle coming out of it. That's a vape.
That's
and then
crazy.
Like highlighters, you know, that
that's
they look
odd.
Like a vape.
Yeah.
But then the smartwatch too was a vape as well. So it was like all these things hidden. And then, I mean, the big, like, a part of what that series for that video was about how these companies are marketing to kids, even though, you know, underage, you're not supposed to do it. They're marketing to kids. I mean, because what adult, I mean, yes, do I wear hoodies sometimes? Yes. But what adult is trying to hide their vaping if they're legal?
Actually the documentary on, I think on Netflix, maybe, on vaping.
Oh, I'm going to have to watch it.
I'll have to find it for us and we can like maybe story it about like the how it started, the vaping.
Oh, yes, yes.
Because they were smokers and it was like a social thing and they knew it wasn't good for them, but they wanted like still have the social aspect of it.
Yeah.
And then it spiraled into what it spiraled into.
Yeah.
So this other video of this mom who her kids had gone to a like a school fair, health, it was like a health fair, I think, and they gave their kids Narcan. Do you know what Narcan is? So Narcan is the it's a drug that you give people who are ODing.
Oh, yes.
And so the mom was like, why are they giving our kids this? Why is this like becoming normalized? And somebody else responded to this video and was like, I do this. And I teach people how to do this. Because you never know when you're going to be in a situation where you are going to have to use it. And then I saw this other video, this other girl who she goes to probably like EDM places. She says she does like the hula hooping with the colors. People like come up to her and are like, oh, this is so cool. And she's like, and they'll be like, hey, do you want a drink? She's like, people like to offer me drinks. And I'll tell them, no, but I have Narcan if you need it. And she just like made it like a thing where people, she's like the hula hoop girl. And
with the Narcan.
With the Narcan, right? And she's like, one day, she's like, she never had to ever like really use it. But anyways, one day she wasn't going to go out. And her friends were like, no, let's go out. And she's like, okay. So she goes out and she's doing her hula hoop thing. And she says the security guard comes up to her and is like, hey, are you the girl with the Narcan? And she's like, yeah. He's like, I think somebody's ODing. Bring it. And so she did. And she was able to like give the girl the Narcan and get her into an ambulance and essentially save her life.
Yeah. Wow.
And so you can actually go online and find like where Narcan near you. And GoodRx has a good like, I think, article like where you can get free Narcan.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But they have an article on like where to get free Narcan, because yeah, you can get it for free. I think you can get it at pharmacies. And again, like you may not need it. You may even have anybody in your life who may need it in your dental setting. You don't know.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's even one of the required things in our kits, right?
No.
Yeah. These things happen so fast. I think the other thing is if people are using drugs, if you know people are using drugs or buying things off the street, make sure there's test kits that you can buy I think you can buy them on Amazon, like the test for fentanyl. Tell people like, hey, you can buy these things are accessible, to test your stuff before you take it, because fentanyl will kill you and kill you so quickly. And you know, kids are dying from taking candy. And telling my kids like, hey, don't take anything from strangers. And my kids like good and bad, but one of my sons like one is like super clean and like he's picky, like doesn't want to share food and stuff. I'm like, okay, whatever. And then the other one, food restrictive thing. So he only eats very specific things. So he's not going to try new food from people, which like, so I'm not, I don't have to worry about him. And the other one who's like super clean doesn't want to get germs from other people. So I was like, okay, cool. You know, like kind of saves us where that they're not going to like run into those situations, but still talking to them about like, hey, don't take anything from strangers because you do not know. Even something as innocent as like, hey, I have a headache. Can you give me something for my headache? You know, it's scary out there. So, you know, taking the steps, educating yourself. And I'm by no means am I like an expert. I know this has turned into like wagging of alcohol, but also talking about like substance abuse and the dangers of substance abuse and the impact of that on like our lives and our patients' lives.
And know that it's not just isolated to having like adult patients.
Yeah, how do you like, ask it, these children and how does that work?
Need to be brought up in the pediatric setting too. So it's tough, I have to say. You know, I don't think it's black and white, but it is something, because you don't want to think that your middle schooler or your 13-year-old is vaping or doing drugs. I get that. And it's hard because they are minors. So then when they are minors, I believe you are legally required to tell their legal guardian if they disclose it to you. I do remember like in hygiene school, I had one patient, he was 18 and I saw signs, you know, that he was a smoker, but you know, I can't be like, you're a smoker. So I asked him, and I always bring it up in the sense that like, cause if I see them like hesitating, like hemming and hawing, then I do bring up, I'm like, oh, I'm just asking because I'm seeing some signs in your mouth that you might be smoking or that can lead, that I've seen in smokers, you know? And then usually they'll like open up and say something like, oh yeah, I do it sometimes. And then one time I had to be like, because they were 18, I was like, I'm not going to tell your parents, you know, because then at least they have me and I can, you know, sort of help guide them from there. And he did end up telling me that he did smoke, but that's how I lead into it. Like, oh, I'm just asking because I see signs of this.
Yeah.
Because then they're going to be like, oh, in a way you're like, oh crap, they can tell by my mouth, you know? So then maybe they're like, well, then I can't lie about it, you know? So I do bring that question up. I haven't had a minor disclose it to me, though.
Yeah,
I haven't had that happen. But are they doing it or are they not? I don't know, you know. But if I see signs of it, I do ask. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. And I do ask, like, in a conversational way. Like, I'm asking about other things and, like, having it in between. So it's not like, are you doing this, you know? Yeah. And sometimes I wait till like the parent is like occupied. So I'm just, you know, so I'm just, because I think some parents, if they hear me, they might get offended too, you know?
Yeah. I saw a video that you did that I thought was really good about everything said in pediatric dentistry. You have to be like super bubbly and super hyper. But really, you should be the calm one, especially if they are already like excited. And I think maybe the same thing goes for situations like this when you're having these conversations. You don't want to be overly like excited about like, oh my God, are you doing things? Yeah. But instead of like, it's not a big deal, it's fine. And hopes that they will like open up to you and have conversations that are both receptive on both sides of things. Yeah. No shame on anybody who drinks. It's
No,
a little shame if you smoke, though, for sure. Some shame. But you know, addiction is hard. We have a friend who...
No, addiction is real.
Yeah, I have a friend who, our friend, our dental hygiene friend, she was a smoker for a long time. One of my really good friends.
Yeah, I think
before, I won't name her. She was a smoker before hygiene school. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that those addictions are real. Before you know any better, right? And even like when you know better, I mean, because how do like professional people get addicted to drugs, right? How do people, I mean, you see these celebrities getting addicted.
There's still dentists who smoke.
Dentists who smoke. I'm there. Dentists who
an addiction for a reason.
Do drugs, you know, like, I tell you, because I'm around a lot of dental people and some dental people do some things and I'm like, we grew up very differently. I'm so afraid of getting in trouble or deported. Not, you know, I'm a citizen, but, you know, still that fear lives in you when you're like a product of immigration. So I'm like, gotta live that straight line life. Addiction impacts you severely and differently. I just feel like it was maybe something important for us to talk about because, I mean, what great for us, I think the positive is being in a profession where we are educated and we can know the impacts and know how to look up research and keep ourselves educated and in a situation place where we can like hopefully educate other people about these things. Not that anybody's dealing with addiction or maybe you are. And that's okay too. Self-reflection. You know, I have friends, I have dental professional friends. And there's a really popular dentist who talks about his addiction to drugs now as being a recovering. I have other dental friends who I admire very much who are in recovery.
And that's so good because the first step is recognizing it, acknowledging it, facing it. And that's hard. That's a hard first step.
I don't know what that's like. I imagine that's extremely difficult, but I don't think that anybody like chooses to want to go through addiction, right? And sometimes you just don't know that you're going to be the one who's going to get addicted to it. Mm-hmm. You know, like my grandfather, they say the reason he started drinking was after they had killed his cousin and his father had been murdered too. A lot of violence. You know, so just like life. And my uncle started drinking because of his son being murdered. You know, it's just, it's all those, you just don't know when things are going to hit you.
Yeah.
And so if you're dealing with something or a family member is dealing with something, like, present you all the best vibes, zero judgment.
No, there's people who care for you and will be there with you to walk if you're ready to leave or if you know somebody who's going through it, you know, go in with no judgment and wanting to help.
And stay strong this holiday season. And if not, well, I'll try to have that strength for us. hopefully this holiday season, we'll be thinking about you, sending you all the best vibes this holiday season because we know these holiday seasons can be especially hard. We can just, you know, and you don't have to tell people that you're sober. Or that you're quitting alcohol, you know, I did. I was just like, I'm just, you know, and I can just said like for my health and, you know, just like a challenge or whatever. It can be just like a, people do like sober months or whatever, but you could also just tell them like, I just don't want to drink today.
Yeah. Do it for you. And enjoy your holiday season.
Is I do think those things are important, but if you know people who are using drugs, and like I think I was telling you earlier, what I find is, you know, it's not so much the cocaine usage or the Molly usage, which is ecstasy or MDMA. It's the things that are normal.
Yeah, the prescription.
The prescription drugs, yeah. Right? And, you know, people who, like, what I've heard is that they'll be on things like Adderall to help them during the day, get them energized, get them to do things. Thing with Adderall, they and those types of drugs, they also have like a downer at the end. They don't eat all day. They feel horrible at the end of it. And so to ease over that anxiety, they'll take Xanax. Let Xanax help them with that, right? But Xanax also makes you feel kind of poopy. And then, you know, again, there goes that cycle, yeah. Right?
I remember when I started college the first time around, so like 18, 19 years ago. Yeah, all the students, they were not, I mean, I didn't because I was always like not aware of things going on, but they would be buying Adderall off of each other.
Yeah.
To focus in school and whatnot. But like, you know, like you said, it could be that they're not
using it for the right reason. Yeah. And I mean, it could be that they have like a need for it, right? I was prescribed Xanax many moons ago, and I did not like Xanax. I've been on Valium and clonazepam and Xanax for my panic attacks. And do they like help me? They absolutely help me. I did not, and I'm actually a fan more of clonazepam than I am of Valium diazepam. So because I felt like Xanax was really strong, so I could see how somebody would. They don't give me a high. What they do is when I'm having panic attacks and I feel like my heart rate is like accelerating and my blood pressure is getting really high, it helps lower my physical reaction to the panic attack. And so like once it like lowers those physical. Thank you for listening to Positively Hygiene.
Join us every Tuesday for a new episode. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram for the opportunity for how you can contribute to our podcast.
And follow and review Positively Hygiene on Apple and Spotify podcasts.